Worth Repeating is made possible thanks to the support from the 80/20 Foundation, the Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill.
Some of the stories may not be suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised. Welcome to the Worth Repeating podcast. I'm Tori Poole. This is the first part of the live storytelling event recorded at the Irma and Emilio Nicolas Media Center at Texas Public Radio in downtown San Antonio. The theme was standing on business. From taking a chance to standing up to little men, these stories are all about perseverance. Can you think of a time you stood on business? Our first storyteller is Christina Hinojosa. Christina shares a story about a hiking trip I went a little long.
Hang on. Okay, so it was March 2021, and I was in San Juan National Forest in southern Colorado. It was going to be my first ever backpacking trip. I was at the trailhead with nothing more than a raw cabbage, sleeping bag, and some hygiene essentials in my oversized backpack. I didn't need much since I was heading to a fully furnished yurt about 3.5 miles away. I had just joined a co-ed scouting group, and I was joined by two teenage boys my age, Sam and Logan, Logan's dad, Joe, and Sabrina, a 35-year-old woman. But just a few months ago, or before that, I had been alone. It was early COVID and I overdosed. My dad found me and he got me all the help I needed. I had some of those lingering emotions still at the trailhead, but I was there and that's all that mattered. A blizzard named Xylia had just hit the region, causing about 3 feet of extra snow for a total of 5 to 6 feet, which was crazy. And I was there at the trailhead a little bit nervous, but I saw a bunch of happy families and groups of people playing. And it was bright and sunny, so I thought everything would be all right. We were given a laminated map to share with directions to the yurt. Rather than having trail names and trail markers like a typical map, this one had rhymes and riddles that we had to solve that would lead us to landmarks that would then guide us to the yurt. A little weird, but okay. We study the map a little bit and find that we need to be heading towards a red car, but with the fresh snow from the blizzard, it was really hard to hike through, and every single possible landmark was covered in a bunch of snow, making it hard to see. A 3.5 mile hike that should have taken maybe 4 to 5 hours max quickly turned into us finding the first landmark after 6 hours. Yeah. Before we knew it, it was already dark, the sun had set, and we did not even find the second landmark. We didn't know what to do, and then Sam, he says, "You guys are too slow. I'm going to go find this yurt on my own." And I'm just like, "No, you're not." And I start following him. I find him on top of this hill, no gloves on, trying to stick his raw fingers into the snow to fix his snowshoe that was falling off. I tell him to stop. I give him my gloves, and then I bend over trying to fix his snowshoe. As I do this, I accidentally drop my trekking poles falling into the snow, but I fix his snowshoe. I then ask him if he can help me up, and he's like, "Sorry, Christina, I have to keep finding this yurt," and he leaves me all alone. So I'm just lying there, and suddenly this night that I thought that I might die became the first night that I really wanted to live. It was so dark, I couldn't even see the moon or the stars or 10 feet ahead of me, and the only sounds I could hear were wolves and hogs in the distance. Even if I managed to get my trekking poles and get up, I had no map, I had no shelter, nothing. I didn't know what to do. I remember hearing as a child that crying doesn't solve anything, but I had no other solution, so I just let it out. I just cry and I cry and I cry, and the tears, they come out of my face and they meet the cold air and it stings my skin, but I don't care. It just keeps going. And I think back to my overdose and how my dad helped me and I had someone there for me, and how I was all alone this time and I just really needed someone there. And then I heard footsteps, and I look up, and I see Logan, Sabrina, and Joe, and they heard me because of how loud I was crying. They helped me up, and then we find Sam nearby, who, he didn't make it far, and then we decide we need to go rest. Yeah. After that, you know, we go, we find the circle of trees, we dig a hole, we insulate it with HEB bags that we had, and then we cover it with a bed sheet and we go to bed. And I remember being so scared to fall asleep that night because what if I don't wake up? But before I knew it, the sun was like shining through the bed sheets and I woke up, and then we all discussed whether we should even keep going. And I don't know what compelled me. I don't know if it was when I was younger, my brother was a Boy Scout and I just wanted to be cool like him and do this outdoor stuff. I don't know if it was something deeper within me, but I begged everyone to keep going. Like, I needed to finish this goal that I set out to do. And everyone agreed. So we start going, and I'm filled with so much adrenaline that I'm in the front plowing through the snow. And after about 8 hours, I finally see the yurt in the distance. And I start crying tears of joy, and I announce to everyone that we made it. And then I get closer, and I see a giant lock on the door. And I then ask, guys, what's the code? And they're like, what code? And I start crying again, and we're trying to sit there figuring out the code. And then all of a sudden, Joe conveniently pulls out a giant machete, and we just hit it over and over again until we can finally break in. And the minute I stepped in, all my adrenaline wore off and I was just left with body pain. I took off my shoes, and there were, my toes were black and blue from all the ice and the snow, and my shoulders were raw and bleeding from the friction of my backpack. And I had these muscle spasms in my chest that didn't leave for months later. But we got there and we were safe, and that's all that mattered. Now, a few days pass and we finally start heading back to the trailhead. And I remember something Sabrina told me early on. She said that snow tells a different story than other ground does. And I didn't know what this meant at all, but I started walking back to the front and I saw like the miles of footprints and the, you know, the shelter we made, and it was still there after a few days had passed. And if this was just dirt or concrete or something else, it wouldn't be there. And seeing this really put everything into perspective for me. This was all about my perseverance, and that physical remain there kind of signified that to me. And it really helped me visualize how I want to live the rest of my life, which is fully, authentically, and just living it for me. Yeah, thank you.
This podcast is proudly supported by the 80/20 Foundation, dedicated to creating opportunities through education, community outreach, and meaningful impact. For this and more information, visit 8020foundation.com.
Our next storyteller is Christy Ward. Christy shares a story about a call that was coming from inside the house.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for being here instead of watching the game. Not really supporting us, are you? Just kidding. So I created an organization called Menopause Mijas, and our mission is, thank you, to educate, advocate, and empower women through midlife. And that is how I got dubbed the Menopause Queen. Before you think that's fancy or anything, that comes with a crown. No, it doesn't. It comes with hot flashes, brain fog, and then some, right? So I have to think back, and it probably all started when I was around 36. I'm 46 now. You thought I was 21, I know. So I'm 46 now. Thinking back on it, it probably started around when I was 36. Shoulder pain, body aches. I just wasn't connecting it all, though. I didn't know, because we're not educated on that. So also, I didn't have the telltale sign to help me out. Like, I had my partial hysterectomy when I was 29, so it's not like I had my uterus sending me monthly newsletters saying, mija, something might be wrong. So, yeah, I don't have periods for 17 years. It's amazing. Right, babe? Okay. So, yeah. You know, a few years back, I'm 44. We are the caregivers for my grandma, and she's lived with us on and off for over 10 years. She's in her 90s. She got diagnosed with dementia. If you've ever been a caregiver before, you know how difficult that is. And so I also had a leadership position at a nonprofit. And if you've ever worked for a nonprofit, you know you wear multiple hats. So I had a lot. I was juggling a lot. On top of that, my adult children navigating their adulthood, and I'm still mothering them. Financial struggles because HEB doesn't take passion for payment. So, you know, it's hard out there. And so those are all the triggers. And little did I know what I was going through was depression. I had two anxiety attacks, which I thought were heart attacks. Went to the urgent care twice. My chest was tight, lightheadedness, blood pressure was up. I never had trouble with this. Nothing changed in my diet. I thought literally I was dying. Like, what the hell is happening? What the fuck is going on? Because I just felt like I wasn't myself. And now I get when women say that, like, I just don't feel like myself. I get it now. And all the while, I want to shout out to my husband because he supported me. And there's a difference between putting up with us and supporting us. So shout out to all the partners who support their significant other. Thank you. Well, thank you. And I was a mess, y'all. I was so mean. I didn't want him to touch me. I only wanted to be touched when I wanted to be touched. He just tried being loving, and I was like, get away. So, you know, all that's going on. And just to give you a little context, I never suffered through depression before. Growing up, I was sexually abused, physically abused, and still, I was a happy person. I never let that get in the way of me being happy. So for me to feel this depression, I thought, this is so weird. What is going on? I mean, I know the world is hard right now. Like, shit's crazy, right? But this was different. I didn't want to get up. I was so sad. I was always a happy-go-lucky person, cup half full. And so I knew something was wrong. Something was wrong. And so one day, I'm looking at a TikTok, and it's Dr. Mary Claire Haver being interviewed by Tamsin Fadell. Now, NBA fans, Dr. Mary Claire Haver is like the Michael Jordan of midlife. And little did I know when I'm watching that, and I got diagnosed just by watching a TikTok. So TikTok's not a waste of time, guys. So I got diagnosed. I diagnosed myself. Everything she was talking about, I was like, that's what I have. That's what's going on. Okay? And so rewind before me knowing this, I had already had 3 appointments with 3 different doctors begging to be diagnosed because if it wasn't that, then seriously, something was wrong. I was almost about to go see a cardiologist because I was having heart palpitations. I mean, the works, almost passing out. I'll tell you one of the craziest stories, what happened at one of the doctors. Legs were in the stirrups, open. He's, you know, behind the blanket, popping his head up every now and then, talking to me. And I'm like, can we check to see if I may be, you know, going through the change? We call it cougar puberty because it sounds super cool. And my husband's 10 years younger, so I am a cougar. And so he's like, oh, okay, we can do some blood work. And then he's in there looking around. Pops his head open, slaps my inner thigh and says, oh no, you're still pink down there. You're good. So my vagina passed the midlife test, but my body's not. I'm like, I need a new nervous system then because something's going on. And y'all, I wasn't educated. And I heard some gasps in the crowd. Right? Sickening. I wasn't educated, so I didn't say anything. I just got in the car, called my husband, was crying like a delirious, crazy woman saying, I just don't know what's wrong with me. Because I wasn't being validated. I wasn't being heard. And you know, these doctors, they're not educated themselves. They get less than 6 hours of midlife, menopause training in school. So, you know, there's that. And so, so that was devastating for me. And now that I've educated myself, I've become a certified menopause health coach. Because I was taking a walk one day and I thought, it shouldn't be like this for us. It shouldn't. So I stood on business and I made it my mission to help other women not experience what I did. And it's all fun sometimes, right? It's funny, all the changes we go through. Men, y'all go through it too, just so you know. And it's just, it shouldn't be like that. And so here we are educating our own providers. And then when we have leadership roles with, you know, our work, it becomes even harder. There's so many women that quit their job. So many women think, okay, well, maybe I'm just getting old. Maybe I just can't do this anymore. Maybe this is just not for me. So they quit. And if they don't quit, they get fired. And it kind of happened to me. I was trying to quit. I was trying to find another job, but my work did it for me. They're like, you got to go. I had filled out ADA paperwork because I learned that the symptoms of perimenopause and menopause qualify for ADA and FMLA. So if you didn't know, now you know. And still, I got let go. So I make it a mission to not just educate women, but educate employers on how to retain your good employees. You don't have to let them go just because they don't know what the fuck they're doing anymore. We got to get on meds, right? We got to get, not meds, but hormone replacements. And I don't want women being misdiagnosed, dismissed, or gaslit. It's done. We're done with that. We have to be louder. Thank you. So little did I know that midlife would bring me passion that, you know, I never thought I would be doing. But here I am, the menopause queen, teaching women how to advocate for themselves, track their symptoms, and be a bad bitch.
This episode is proudly supported by the Lifshutes Foundation, a San Antonio-based charitable foundation committed to strengthening communities through philanthropy and support for meaningful causes. For this and more information, visit directory.tpr.org.
Our next storyteller is Mackenzie Stewart. Mackenzie shares a story about wearing multiple hats, but realizing her strength may not lie in security.
I got my start in service years ago working for a small family restaurant, so small that my mom was my manager and my grandpa and cousin were handymen for the company. So whenever we would have Christmas parties, it was always just my family hanging out. When I moved to San Antonio years ago, I decided I wanted a similar setup to that. So I bounced around for a couple years from service job to service job until I found my perfect fit. And so this is the restaurant that I'm at right now, and I love it very much. It's 8 people on staff, kind of rotates in and out for 4 days of service, and we have 2 owners who are super involved. And we're all really close. It's wonderful. It's great. But there are disadvantages to working for such a small company. You learn how to wear many hats very quickly. So in my time there, I've been server, hostess, bartender, manager, DJ, event coordinator, florist, handyman. There's a lot of them. But the one that I am the worst at is security. So there was this one night. It was a busy Friday. We were ramping down after a long night of service. And I'm at the pass, folding silverware into rollies, and I look over, and there's a gentleman walking through the front door. Now, our restaurant is very small. It's about the size of this room, which includes some offices, kitchen, restroom, walk-ins, dry stock, all of that. So very, very small. He walks through the front door, straight into the dining room section, and I look him up and down, and I'm like, okay. He looks a little bit disheveled. He's got a beanie on. He's got long hair. He's wearing a ratty old t-shirt and a hoodie that's like super distressed. Notably, he's also wearing pajama pants. Now, the restaurant that I work for isn't fine dining, but like it's not a pajama pants type of place. So I was like, that's very interesting. But if you know the people that I work with or our owners, we all keep a centric company. So I was like, okay, maybe this is like a friend. So I go up and I talk to him. We're talking. And he's really nice and he's really well-spoken and like super polite. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He notes that he's looking for one of our owners, that he's an old friend and that he just wants to catch up. He hasn't seen him in years. There's life events going on and he just wants to chat. And at this time, we had just opened up a second restaurant and we were doing a lot of word of mouth marketing at the time, trying to push people towards that other restaurant. So that owner that he was looking for was over there. So it's like, oh my gosh, yes, perfect. Okay. I gave the whole spiel. I was like, all right, this is the spot. He's over there. You should go and hang out. And he's like, oh my gosh, yes, I've actually been meaning to check it out. Super great. Like, I'm really excited. I'm going to head over there now. I was like, oh, perfect. Great. So I turn around and I walk back to the pass, continuing folding my rollies. I don't watch him leave. And I notice that all of my coworkers are gone. They're nowhere to be seen. I look around. Normally, they're like buzzing around the room, talking to customers, pouring drinks, rolling silverware, running food. But they're not there. I'm like, okay, that's kind of weird. And I go back to rolling my silverware. And I look over at the door. And this gentleman is back at the door standing there. And I'm like, oh, weird. So I head over and I check on him again. He's like, oh, yeah, I don't have my car, so I'm going to walk there. But my phone's almost dead, so can you give me directions? And if you know me in real life, you know I am horrible at directions. It's so bad. Like, I'll be heading somewhere, and my friends are all watching my location, and I'm just, like, driving in circles. So I give him this disclaimer, and I pull up my phone, and I'm like, all right, so you're here and you're going to go here. You're going to go down this road. Here's a shortcut. Why did I know that? I don't know. And so he's looking at me. We're like going over everything. And I'm like, all right, when you get to this building, it's going to look exactly like this. This is where you need to be. Give him a great description. And he's like, oh, you're so polite. You're so like helpful. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And I'm like, oh, okay. Thank you. And so he goes to leave again. I don't watch him leave again. I go back to the pass and I'm making my rollies again. And I look over and our front of house manager is peeking around the corner. And I'm like, that's kind of weird. So I walk over and I check on him. And he looks very pale and he's like, what did you tell him? And I was like, oh, he was looking for the owner. Like, just sent him to the location, like old friends. They're just trying to catch up. And he freaks out and he like, oh my God, I need to call him. And he goes off to the office. I'm like, okay. It's kind of weird, but I try to go about my business. My other coworker comes up to me and she was like, why were you talking to that man? And I was like, he was really nice. Like, I don't know. Like, he was cool. I don't know. You guys are like kind of being mean. She looks me dead in the face and she goes, Mackenzie, that man had a knife tucked into his pajama pants. And I was like, oh my God. My heart dropped. I felt so bad. But yeah, like I was looking at him in the face the whole time. Like I was trying to have a polite conversation. Like I was making eye contact and they were like, you didn't look down? I was like, I'm sorry. I was being polite. So he obviously was headed towards the other location with a knife. So we called the police. We called the man that he was after, and let him know the situation. And the police were called. They patrolled everything. Nothing really came of it. We had some friends who were actually in security who went down to the restaurant to like hang out and make sure my boss didn't get stabbed to death. So yeah, nothing really ever came of it. Luckily, that is the only time I've ever really had to play security. Thank God for all of my coworkers. But I found over the years that I have been like, I've just grown into so many other roles. I don't really have to carry that out anymore. And I thank my bosses and my coworkers for just like giving me the space to just like learn about myself, learn the job. And it's been wonderful. It's been great. And yeah, if you have a strange gentleman walk into your establishment, maybe look him over once or twice.
. This episode is proudly sponsored by Pasha Mediterranean Grill, serving up fresh, authentic Mediterranean favorites made with quality ingredients, from flavorful gyros and kebabs to crisp salads and homemade hummus. For this and more information, visit gopasha.com.
Our last storyteller is Brendan Potter. Brendan shares a story about taking a chance on himself.
You guys having a good time? Yeah, thank you guys for coming out. You guys could be watching Wemby throw some elbows right now, and instead you guys are here. Thank you. Thank you. You guys should not have come to see me. I came here to thank you, Tori. I came here tonight to speak about standing on business, and I've been struggling for like a few weeks to figure out what that means to me and just what like business is to me and where my relationship with business started. I think my relationship with business started when I was 20 years old. I was freshly married, like we all were at 20, right? Yeah, I got married and my wife had a career and I did not. I worked at a call center in Arizona. She made more than me the first year, and the competitive part of me was like, I don't like this. I don't like that. How do I make more money? So I decided to apply for like HR within the company that I worked for so I could advance through that company. And I got turned down. No, nobody's surprised. Okay. Yeah, all right. So, that's fine. I got turned down. My buddy actually got the job, and he would tell me these like very depressing statistics. This one time he was like, do you know the turnover here is like 7.5 months? And I had been there for a year. All right, it's time to get a new job. All right. So I very quickly lined up a job in Texas. Yeah, hell yeah, hell yeah. I love Texas. I moved here from Arizona, which like side note, I love because nobody says like, don't Arizona my Texas. Nobody cares. If you come here from Arizona, they're like, thank you. You got to wait just in time. So I moved here from Arizona and I took a job doing PDR, and nobody knows what PDR is. It's called paintless dent repair. And when you explain that to people, they still don't know what that means. It's nice. It's very frustrating. So I have to tell people like I do dents, and they're like, you dance? And I'm like, don't tell people that. You're not allowed to tell people that. I don't dance. I do dents. I take dents out of cars. So I moved here to learn how to do that. And it's been a good thing for me, man. When I took this job here in Texas, they asked me, like, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And I was asked that at the job before I came here. And I always think about Mitch Hedberg. I don't know if you guys know the comedian Mitch Hedberg. Yeah, he has this bit all about how, like, they asked him, where do you see yourself in 5 years? And he's, like, celebrating the five-year anniversary of you asking me that question. I was, like, the exact opposite. I was like, I'm going to be sitting in your chair. Give me that chair. You know what I mean? Like, let's double it. Give me 10 years. I'm going to be sitting in that chair. So if they would have asked me right when I took that job doing PDR, like, where do you see yourself in 10 years? I would have been like, I'm sitting in your chair. So I let 10 years go by and I worked my ass off to become a good dent guy, dude. I don't know if you guys could tell by my tan. The skin cancer means I'm working outside a lot. I get a lot of cars. I don't get to be in buildings like this. Yeah. So I took a job, and at about the 10-year mark, right on the dot, I decided, you know what? I would like to go in and ask for a raise. I feel like I deserve it. So I went in, and I was on the way driving there, and I thought it was such a given that I was going to get this raise that until about 4 minutes before I got to the restaurant, I was like, wait, what if they say no, you know? So I was like, okay, well, I started going through my head. Okay, well, what do they do if they say no? I can't just show up on Monday and be like, yeah, that was a good call. Good thing you guys didn't give me more money. I'm glad you guys, that was a great call, guys. So I took the stand that I had to stand on business, that I had to go by my principal, and that when I fixed a car, I deserved X amount of a car that I would fix. Thank you, ma'am. She fixes cars, yes. Yeah, I know, I'm sorry, yeah. But I had to take that stand. Now, the way that it worked for me when I made that decision was that the only market available to me to work in to get that extra percentage was Corpus Christi. Hey, Okay, yeah, thank you. Okay, yeah. Tori was like, do not shit on Corpus Christi, okay? You will turn off this crowd. No, the only place that I had to work at was Corpus Christi. And so I decided to get that extra percentage, I would drive every day from New Braunfels to Corpus Christi. Yeah, people look at me like my mental health is really, you know. As a side note, Tori was like, can you tell me about that first drive? And I'm like, I cried the whole way there. I cried the whole way back. It was 5 hours of crying. She asked me like what I do on my drives. I used to listen to music every day. I don't know if you guys know this, but I can only listen to an album so many times in a row. So I started listening like podcasts, and then I started to listen to audiobooks, and I found out this really cool thing about books. If you tell people that you listen to 100 books in a year, they're like, oh my God, that's so inspirational, you know? If you tell them that you listen to 329 in a year, they're like, you need to get a therapist, you know? You need some help. So I started driving down to Corpus every day, and I decided that that's how I would make that extra percentage. I only had to do that for so long, and I did it, everybody! Hell yes! Thank you. It sucked. It sucked so much. Yeah, thank you. No, so I started driving down there. The first dealership that I picked up down in Corpus, I picked up the BMW of Corpus Christi. I picked up the Mercedes. I picked up the Infiniti. I started, yeah, thank you. She owns a Mercedes. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, and I really decided to stand on business. Now, when I started driving down there and I started like really just going through the motions of like, all right, this is how I'm going to make this money. Like I said, I cried the whole way down there. I was like, I thought I had friends, you know? So I set up my business and everything was going well. And it wasn't until very recently that I decided that I would take a step back. And instead of, so I only had to go there for 2 years, right? And I actually went down there for 5 years because everybody down there took care of me. All y'all Corpus people, Corpus is lovely. I was about to curse. Corpus is lovely. They took care of me for like 5 years. And finally, about 3 months ago, I had to go in and be like, look, my van has like 370,000 miles on it. My mental health is not doing good, guy. I can only listen to so many audiobooks a year. And so I had to take a stand on business and just tell everybody down there, like, look, I don't want to, I can't come down here anymore and I can't fix your dance. Thank you. Yeah. And so I took a stand and I started working back here and I've been picking up business. It's been great. What I'm trying to get through with all of this is to tell everybody that you should take a stand on your business. If you think that your business is worth standing on, you should bet on yourself. Thank you. I didn't mean for that to be funny. That was nice. All right. Thank you very much. My name is Rita Potter.
That's it for the Worth Repeating podcast. Do us a favor and give us a like, subscribe, or review us wherever you stream podcasts. Worth Repeating returns this fall. Have a theme suggestion, want to join the storyboard, or maybe you just want to give us our flowers? I'd love to hear from you. Shoot me an email at worthrepeating@tpr.org. Don't miss part two of the Worth Repeating podcast on the theme Standing on Business, now streaming. Worth Repeating is made possible by the 8020 Foundation, Lifshutz Foundation, and Pasha Mediterranean Grill. Worth Repeating is a production of Texas Public Radio. I'm Tori Poole. Thanks for listening.